great everyone said he was, and the snippets he'd sometimes shared with her on their Sunday drives. He'd had his own apartment at the lodge, so he'd rarely even slept at the house. Della Lee ran her tongue over her crooked front teeth, thinking about her answer. "My mother was a troubled person," she finally said, "and she was too beautiful for her state of mind. She always looked like she knew more than she did. She left home when she was 16 because her stepfather was molesting her. She dropped out of high school and got a job as a checkout girl at the Winn-Dixie. When she met my father, she thought he was going to be her savior. She loved to tell me the story of how she was sitting on a bench downtown one Saturday, drinking a bottle of Pepsi Cola with a straw, when he walked up to her and said, 'You are the most beautiful creature I've ever seen. Can I buy you dinner?' It was like something out of a movie. I came along 9 months later. She was 18. Josie thought about it, and she vaguely remembered Della Lee's mother, small and pretty and rough like Della Lee, but with big green doll eyes. "Your mother was Greenie Baker, right?" "Yes. I remember seeing her around." "I'm not surprised. Following you and your father on your Sunday drives was one of her favorite things to do."
"She followed him when I was with him?"
Della Lee nodded. Timelines, like strings of thread, were weaving together, forming connections.
"Were you with her?"
"Sometimes. But as soon as I was old enough to stay home alone, I did. I hated following you, hated it. But then I would always hear about it when she got home, where he took you, how you used to laugh when you were with him. Sometimes I would put my fingers in my ears so I wouldn't hear it. I didn't want to hear about him acting like a good father with you."
"What happened to your father?"
"He died when I was 19.
"And he let your mother do this?"
"I don't know if he actually knew. I didn't even know who he was until I was 9. He paid off my mother when I was born. Bought her the house, bought her a car, bought her silence."
"Why would he do that?" Josie asked, absolutely transfixed by this time.
"Probably so his wife wouldn't know. But my mother, God bless her, went to his wife when I was 9. 'This is your husband's daughter,' I remember her saying. 'Look at her. His own flesh and blood, and he won't even see her.'"
"That must have been horrible for you."
"Actually, that was the day everything made sense," Della Lee said. "That was the day I realized why my mother was following Marco Serini around town."
"Why?"
Della Lee's eyes went past Josie's shoulder. She looked around the bedroom. "I've been in your house once before. That day when I was 9 years old, I stood in your living room. Well, you weren't born yet, so I guess it wasn't your living room at the time. I couldn't believe how beautiful this place was. It smelled rich." Josie started coming back to herself, pulling away from the story. No, no, she didn't want to hear the ending. "Your mother gave my mother more money. Bought her silence again. That Margaret is one smart cookie," Della Lee said, shaking her head. "Marco may have had a child, but she was the only one who could give him a legitimate child. It was well known that Margaret and Marco didn't want children, but a year after Margaret found out about me, suddenly there was Josie, their late-in-life baby. The baby that would bind Margaret to Marco's fortune no matter what." Josie stood and backed away from the closet, half tripping over her long coat and ripping the tiara out of her hair. She stood across the room and stared at Della Lee in horror. "Hi, sis," Della Lee said. Chapter 8. Jawbreakers. It seemed like hours passed. They just stared at each other. Della Lee was sitting cross-legged with her hands placidly on her knees. Josie was breathing heavily with anger and indignation.
"That's it," Josie said. "I've had enough."
"Finally," Della Lee said.
"I mean, I've had enough of you. I will not tolerate anyone saying such things about my father. Everyone knows he was a great man. He loved my mother, and my mother loved him. He saved Bald Slope. She pointed to her bedroom door, her hand trembling. Get out! Della Lee rolled her eyes. Oh, grow up, Josie. She couldn't believe it. Was there no way at all to intimidate this woman? This is the real reason you decided to come to my closet. It had nothing to do with running from Julian. Are the two of you in this together? Julian and I are in nothing together anymore. And I didn't run from him. He's a bastard. But I was running from myself, Della Lee said, as she scooted the box back toward her and put the lid on it. She seemed a little sad, or disappointed. Well, what did she expect? That she could just say that Marco Cerini was her father and have Josie embrace her? If you needed money, why didn't you just say so? I'll give you money. You didn't have to go through this whole production of pretending you wanted to help me. Josie went to her purse on the chaise longue and took out her checkbook. She opened it and poised her pen. How much? I don't want your money, Della Lee said, moving her box back into the closet. Josie dropped her arms. Then what are you doing here? Why are you doing this? Why are you saying these things? Because they're true, and I do want to help you. That's why I'm here. Josie snorted, because being angry helped hide the completely ridiculous hurt she felt. She should have known. She should have known Della Lee had something like this up her sleeve. Nothing you say is true. You love your mailman. Is that not true? You feel stuck here. Is that not true? You're trying to make up to your mother for something you did as a child, something she's never going to let you live down. Is that not true? You want to leave this place. You want to wear red. You want to take your candy out of your goddamn closet and eat it in front of everyone. My father did not have a child with another woman, Josie said, and the words fell out of her mouth with a clatter. You don't believe me? Ask your mother, Della Lee said. No! Her mother would have a conniption if she got wind of Della Lee's allegations. She turned and stuffed her checkbook back into her purse. And don't you dare say anything about this to her. Don't say it to anyone. Just tell me what you want. Okay. I want you to ask Samuel Lamar. Josie turned back to her. My father's old lawyer? Yes. Why ask him? She said leerily. Who do you think set up the money, house, and car transfers? The confidentiality agreement? Josie stared at her, not saying anything. She couldn't believe this was happening. How had she let things get to this point? She should have kicked Della Lee out that first day. Fine, she finally said. I'll write him right now. She went to her desk and pulled out a sheet of paper. She didn't know Mr. Lamar's address by heart, but it was in the address book downstairs. She sent him a Christmas card every year. He'd moved to Massachusetts some time ago to live with his daughter's family. But I want you to agree, right now, to leave when I get his answer. When he writes and says my father never had any other children, you will leave this house and never bother me again. Understood? Sure, Della Lee said. But calling would be faster. I don't have his number. I just have his daughter's address in Massachusetts. Ever heard of dialing information? I don't know his daughter's married name. You could find that out from anyone in town. I'm writing him. If you really wanted to know the truth, you'd call. I already know the truth, Della Lee. I don't need proof. Josie closed her eyes and rubbed her forehead. Did it ever occur to you that I was doing this to give you time to leave? Time to make plans? No, that never crossed my mind. A week, maybe two, and I'll get a response, Josie said, putting pen to paper. That should give you enough time. Okay, but be sure to ask him about all of Marco's affairs. Ask him about the other woman besides my mother he paid off. Josie had gotten as far as dear Mr. Lamar. She stopped and turned to Della Lee. She felt hollow, and she wanted candy from her closet. When she finished this letter, she would take armfuls out,
then close the door on Della Lee and eat and eat and eat until the hollow went away. That's a little over the top, don't you think?
Marco did everything in a big way.
You're really starting to get on my nerves. Is there anything about my life you haven't insulted yet?
She turned back to the letter.
I apologize for writing out of the blue like this. I hope you're well.
I don't know. Let me see your teeth.
I think I hate you. I've recently heard an upsetting rumor, and only you, as my father's lawyer and trusted confidant, can invalidate it. I can't go to my mother with this, you understand. I don't want to upset her.
Sibling rivalry, Della Lee said. It happens to the best of us.
Did my father have any other children? Specifically, did he have a child with Greeny Baker?
Chloe couldn't bear the thought of waiting hours to try the stinging nettle tea. What if this was the thing that was going to make everything all right? She started getting excited about feeling better. As soon as she drank the tea, she would know what to do. She would make a decision she could live with, and she would finally stop hurting. At 4 o'clock, she closed the shop early. When she left, Hank at the security gate asked what was her hurry. She happily told him she was going home to make tea. He didn't ask her any more questions, just looked at her with sympathy, like losing Jake was making her lose her sanity, and she didn't want to think about how close to the truth that might be. She dumped her purse and coat on the floor when she got home and went directly to the kitchen. She ferreted out her tea infuser, then boiled water in a cup in the microwave. When she finally took that first sip, she was surprised to find it bitter. She had imagined it sweeter. She didn't want to put sugar in it for fear that would change its power, so she gulped the rest of it. The warm, empty cup still in her hands, she stood still for a moment, hoping the effect would be immediate. It wasn't. She put the cup down and started to pace. This was worse than waiting for the results of the at-home pregnancy test she took 2 years ago. She and Jake always said they were going to wait to have kids. Wait until they were married and had enough in savings that they didn't have to be beholden to Jake's parents. She had been scared, but Jake had been so excited. The results had been negative, of course, but she would never forget how buoyant the thought of being a father had made him. That couldn't be the reason he'd cheated on her, could it? Did he want a child so much he was willing to have one with another woman? Half an hour later, several things were definitely more clear. She decided to take a long bath, not a shower, later that evening. She decided to have pesto pizza for dinner. She also decided to wait to vacuum until next week. But nothing was any more clear when it came to Jake. She stopped pacing, that familiar heaviness settling back in her body, weighing down her limbs. It wasn't working. The tea wasn't going to tell her what to do. She went to the dining room table and sat, then put her head down, resting her cheek against the smooth, cool surface. She felt tears come to her eyes. Why had she thought it would be so easy? She squeezed her eyes shut. When she opened them again, she blinked a few times to clear the blurriness, then saw that she was eye level with the salt and pepper shakers. There, tucked in between them, was the cocktail napkin with Julian's number on it. She'd stuck it there days ago. She reached for it, then sat up and stared at it. Everything came back to this. She needed to know who had caused Jake to stray before she could decide if she could forgive him. There would be no moving on until she knew. She turned when she heard a rustling coming from the kitchen, a small sneaky noise like mice scurrying around. She got up to see that battle-scarred Finding Forgiveness had knocked the paper envelope of stinging nettle off the counter. She picked up the envelope and put it in a drawer. "Stop that," she said to the book beside the toaster. When she got back to the table, Old Love, New Direction was now lying on top of the napkin with Julian's number on it. The old bait-and-switch. She pulled the napkin out from under the book with an exasperated sigh. She went to the phone and dialed quickly so her books wouldn't have any more say in the matter. "Hello?" Julian answered.
His voice was strangely calming. She sat down right where she was, in the middle of the floor. He was that good.
"Julian, this is Chloe."
"Chloe, sweetheart, I've been waiting to hear from you."
"I'm sorry about Saturday night."
"Don't be. I know how a man gets when he thinks he's lost the love of his life."
"I know you do," she said with sympathy. "Still no word from your girlfriend?"
"No."
"Have you, learned anything more about who Jake might have slept with?"
"As a matter of fact, I have. But I'm hurt. Is that the only reason you called?"
"No," she said immediately, mortified that she'd hurt his feelings. "No, of course not."
"Let's get together tonight. I'll tell you then."
"Why won't you tell me now?"
"Because I'd like to think I can also be a friend to you, someone to commiserate with, not just a source of information about your cheating boyfriend."
That made sense. At least she thought it did.
"We can't go to Jiggery's. Jake might be there."
"My favorite weekday haunt is Nightlight. Meet me there around 9 tonight."
Julian hung up before she could say no. It took a moment before she was sure she could stand, a few minutes before she could walk. Of course, she would go to see Julian tonight to find out. But that's not to say she wanted to go to Nightlight alone. She knew it was a rough place.
Chloe chewed on her lip for a minute, then she went to her purse. She dug out the card with Josie's number written on it and dialed.
She heard the phone pick up on the other end, then she heard Josie say,
"Yes, I know it's my phone, but I've never heard it ring before. And do you really think blocking my way is going to keep me from getting to my candy? What do you mean I've already answered?"
"Oh." She heard Josie put her cell phone to her ear and say, "Hello?
Josie?"
"Yes?"
"It's Chloe. Am I interrupting something?"
"No, no," Josie said, laughing, but it sounded forced. "I rarely use this cell phone. I was actually trying to remember how to answer it."
"I was wondering if you would do me a favor."
"Of course I will. What is it?"
She liked that Josie said yes without even knowing what the favor was. That made Chloe feel good. She'd called Josie first for this very reason.
"I know this is a lot to ask, but would you go to a bar with me tonight?"
"A bar?" Josie repeated.
"It's a place I've never been to before, and I'd feel better if someone went with me."
There was a long pause. "I've never actually been to a bar before," Josie said.
"Then now's the perfect time to experience one firsthand. I wouldn't ask if it wasn't important. Someone there has some information for me that could really help me with my situation with Jake."
"What kind of information?" Chloe pinched the bridge of her nose. She didn't want to tell Josie. It made her sound trite and desperate.
"He knows who Jake slept with," she finally said.
"Chloe," Josie said gently, "is this something you really want to know?"
"It's something I have to know. Please come with me."
Josie took a deep breath.
"Okay, I'll go."
Nightlight was located on the winding road leading up to the ski resort. It was set back into the trees with a large gravel parking lot in front. The sign by the road read, "Hamburgers, karaoke, cold beer." Josie figured it had probably been designed to attract the college kids who were on their way up the mountain to ski, but from the looks of things when Josie and Chloe entered, it ended up being a hangout for bearded men in flannel shirts and a couple of rough younger people who wanted to play pool in the back room. At least there wasn't much of a risk of anyone recognizing her and telling her mother. They stopped at the door, letting their eyes adjust to the dimness.
"I don't see him here yet. Let's get something to drink," Chloe said, going to the bar.
Josie followed, feeling out of sorts and conspicuous. Chloe had given Josie her address, the Firehouse Apartments downtown, and Josie had picked her up after Margaret had gone to bed. Della Lee had made happy, squealing noises when she found out Josie was going out with Chloe, but Josie was still so angry about the things she'd said about her father that she'd left without taking any of Della Lee's unsolicited wardrobe advice. It was something she'd regretted when Chloe had opened her apartment door, taken one look at Josie in the same black dress and coat she'd worn earlier that day, and grabbed a bold yellow and red rugby-striped scarf off the coat stand. She'd looped it around Josie's neck and said, "Now you have color. Perfect." Once at the bar, Chloe ordered a lemon drop, so Josie did too. When the drinks arrived, Josie pretended to sip hers. She tried to make conversation, but Chloe was distracted, constantly looking around the bar and saying every 10 minutes, "He said he'd be here." 2 hours later, Chloe was flat drunk, and Josie was trying to figure out a way to get her to leave. Chloe had refused every attempt. Josie couldn't even stop Chloe from calling Jake and leaving him a slurred message, telling him she was at Nightlight and having loads of fun without him. But it was far from the truth. Chloe was more miserable than Josie had ever seen her. Despite everything, Josie wished to God she could call Della Lee. She would know what to do. Chloe was in the process of ordering another martini, and Josie squeezed her eyes shut. She had a headache, and she had to go to the bathroom, but she was too afraid to go alone, and Chloe apparently had a bladder the size of Montana. What would Della Lee do? Della Lee would take charge. She wouldn't care about being nice. Just as the bartender was turning away, Josie said, "Cancel that. We're leaving."
"No, Josie. We have to stay," Chloe said. "Just a few more minutes, please."
"He's not coming, Chloe."
"He said he would. He said to meet him here and he would tell me who Jake slept with."
"Then he lied." "Give her a cup of coffee," she told the bartender. Then she said to Chloe, "I'm going to the restroom. When I get back, we're leaving." She slid off the bar stool and went to the ladies' room.
"Ha! Easy as pie. Strawberry pie. Strawberry rhubarb pie with fresh vanilla ice cream."
She decided she would get a pie on the way home and eat it all. After today, she deserved it. She walked back out into the dim, neon-lit bar a few minutes later, but she only took a few steps before she stopped short. She turned away quickly, her eyes wide and darting back and forth, trying to get her mind around this. She'd channeled Della Lee, and look what happened. Julian appeared. She turned back around. Yes, it was definitely him. But what in the hell was he doing here? Julian was sitting with Chloe, surrounding them both in a cloud of rosy black smoke that only the women in the bar could see. They were leaning in toward each other, smiling, laughing. Chloe was stuck in his smoke, entranced by him. She couldn't get out alone. Josie rubbed her aching forehead. What would Della Lee do? When it came to Julian, Della Lee would run. Run. Okay, Josie could do that. She just had to get Chloe first. The bar was dark enough that there was a chance Julian wouldn't recognize her as the woman who'd been in his house. She walked over to them sideways, like she was doing a line dancing step to the music from the jukebox. Keeping her back to Julian, she angled her way between them. She grabbed Chloe's purse and coat from the bar. "Come on, Chloe, we're leaving."
"No, we don't have to go now," Chloe said jubilantly. "Look, Julian finally made it. Julian, this is Josie."
Josie gaped at Chloe. She'd come here to meet Julian? "It's nice to meet you," Julian said, leaning to the right, trying to see Josie's face. "You look familiar. I thought that the moment I came in and saw you with Chloe. Turn around, pretty. Look at me." He touched her arm, and she stepped away quickly, facing him now.
"She's Josie Serini. Serini. Shh. She's rich," Chloe said.
Josie tried to coax Chloe off the stool. "Come on, let's go." Chloe held on to the bar rail with both hands, refusing to budge.
"I can't go. I haven't found out her name yet."
"Come on, stand up." "Leave the kid here," Julian said. "I'll take her home." "I don't think so." Josie kept tugging at Chloe, but Chloe had suctioned herself to the bar, and the harder Josie pulled, the harder Chloe hung on. "I know I've seen you somewhere before," Julian said. Suddenly, from behind them, Josie heard, "Chloe? Josie, are you two all right?" Josie let go of Chloe, which had the immediate effect of Chloe letting go of the bar. They both turned.
"Adam," Chloe said, "what are you doing here?"
Adam's brows lowered. He did not look pleased. Still, Josie didn't think she'd ever been so happy to see someone. He was wearing a soft brown leather jacket over a turtleneck and a blue scarf the exact color of his eyes. He looked wonderful.
"You called me, Chloe. You left a message on my answering machine."
"I called you?"
"Obviously you intended the message for Jake."
"Oops!"
She took Adam's hand and brought him toward her. Josie had to step back to get out of his way.
"Adam, I want you to meet Julian."
Adam didn't even acknowledge him.
"Let's go, Chloe," Adam said, trying to get her off the stool.
Chloe immediately grabbed the bar rail again. Josie almost said, "Good luck with that. She's a barnacle."
"Hold on," Julian suddenly said, and Josie thought he was protesting Adam's trying to take Chloe away from him. But when Josie looked at him, he was looking right back at her.
It caused a shock, a painful little tingle at the base of her neck.
"You," he said, pointing a finger at her. "I know who you are. You broke into my house. You took my wallet."
"Come on, Josie," Adam said. "Help me with Chloe."
"You owe me money, you fat bitch."
It happened so fast it was almost a blur. Julian was in the process of standing when Adam turned and punched him across the jaw with absolutely no warning. Julian fell backward, and people around them stopped talking and turned to stare.
"Up, Chloe."
Adam literally lifted her off the stool and tore her away from the bar.
"Josie, with me now."
Josie stood motionless while Adam half-carried, half-dragged Chloe away.
"Josie, damn it! With this bum leg, I can't handle you both. Come on!"
She forced her feet to move. She ran to the door and held it open as Adam hauled Chloe out. Chloe was calling,
"Julian! Julian, I'm so sorry! Let go of me!"
The night outside was a shocking contrast to being inside Nightlight. It was cold and quiet, and Josie immediately felt like she had cotton in her ears.
"Who drove?"
Adam demanded, as Chloe struggled in his arms. Josie opened her mouth to try to pop her ears.
"Who drove?"
I did.
"Where's your car?"
"Over there."
Adam crunched across the gravel lot toward the car, saying, "Unlock it." She hurried after him and electronically unlocked the doors. He opened the back door, and together they got the squirming mass of red hair and glitter into the back seat.
"Sit back there with her and give me the keys."
She hesitated, and he started to say something.
"Okay, okay," she said,
handing him the keys and sliding in beside Chloe. He slammed the door, then trotted around the car and got behind the wheel. He sped out of the lot, taking the corner easily. Except for Chloe's progressively vague protests as Josie got her into her coat, the car was uncomfortably quiet. Josie put her arm around Chloe, and soon her head fell on Josie's shoulder. Adam didn't say anything the entire drive to Chloe's place. He didn't even speak as they carried Chloe up the long interior steps that cut the old firehouse into four apartments. Josie got the keys out of Chloe's purse and opened the door. She followed his lead to the bedroom. A large bed with a heavy black headboard dominated the red brick room. This place had a distinctly masculine feel to it. It was hard to believe Chloe lived here. She hadn't put her stamp anywhere. There weren't even bookshelves. How could someone like Chloe live without bookshelves? As soon as they had Chloe on the bed, Adam rounded on her.
"How could you let her get so hammered?" he demanded. "Are you drunk?"
She'd never seen him angry, let alone angry with her. So few people she knew actually got angry. There was indignation, there were snubs, there were insults disguised as compliments, but rarely outright anger.
"I didn't have anything to drink," she said, "and I kept trying to get her to leave. I had no idea she was going there to meet Julian."
"You know that guy? You didn't really break into his house and steal his wallet, did you?" She hesitated for a moment, then said,
It wasn't his house, and it wasn't his wallet.
You stole someone else's wallet? He asked incredulously.
I didn't steal anything. I got a friend's wallet back.
Adam's jaw worked back and forth.
What's gotten into you lately? Does your mother know you're doing this?
That did it.
I'm 27 years old. What does my mother have to do with this?
But that's how everyone sees me, isn't it? Poor Josie, fat, unsocial, under her mother's thumb, not living up to her father's name. I'm so tired of worrying about what people think of me, of what they thought of me as a child. And I'm tired of that look, she said, pointing at his face.
What look?
That look of pity.
He actually took a step back like she'd scared him. If she weren't so mad, if she hadn't had such a lousy day, she would have laughed.
Look, he said, all I'm saying is that Chloe's vulnerable right now. You should be nudging her back in Jake's direction instead of going with her to Dives.
You know what I think? I think you have no idea what's good for her, Josie groused, and it felt good. She wanted to argue, to fight, to stop this constant feeling of having no control over anything except what went in her mouth. You just want her to take the path of least resistance because that's safer.
Damn straight it's safer.
I've got news for you, Adam. Safe is just another word for scared, and I'm not going to nudge her in any direction. This is her call. Whether or not she and Jake get back together has nothing to do with me or you, for that matter.
Jake is living with me right now. I'd say that qualifies as having something to do with me, he said.
No, it doesn't.
He waved his hand dismissively.
You don't know anything about this.
I know enough to stay out of it. Like I know you've got a secret, but have I ever asked you about it? No.
She'd surprised him. A couple of seconds ticked by before he said,
What?
You're hiding something. You're hiding from something. I've known it since the moment I first saw you.
He met her eyes, his head tilting slightly.
You've known a lot since the moment you first saw me.
The room suddenly fell quiet. He had just said he knew. He knew she loved him. Embarrassment felt a lot like eating chili peppers. It burned in the back of your throat, and there was nothing you could do to make it go away. You just had to take it, suffer from it, until it eased off. When he spoke again, his tone was softer.
I'll let you get her undressed.
Oh, yeah, like that was better. He was feeling sorry for her again.
As soon as he left the room, Josie sighed and reached down to take off Chloe's boots. She managed to get Chloe out of her coat and sweater, leaving her in the T-shirt she wore underneath. She then took off her watch and earrings. She tucked the blankets around her, then looked around for something else to do. She wasted some time by folding Chloe's coat and sweater and putting them at the bottom of the bed. Then she placed her boots by the closet. When she knew she couldn't stay any longer, she finally walked to the bedroom door. She took one last look back and saw that there were three books stacked on the bedside table, near the edge, like they were watching Chloe. Josie hadn't noticed them there before. She took a deep breath and opened the door. Adam was sitting on the couch, waiting for her.
"Give me my keys," she said, walking up to him. "I'll drive you back to the bar to get your car."
"I'm not letting you go back there."
He jiggled her keys in his hand absently as he looked up at her.
"I'll get Jake to take me in the morning."
"Then give me my keys and I'll take you home."
He suddenly stood and brushed by her. "I'll drive," he said, walking to the door.
"I told you I didn't drink anything."
"I'll drive."
He opened the door and waited for her. This night was never going to end. She walked to the door and out into the hallway. She headed for the staircase, hearing him close the apartment door, then the fall of his footsteps as he followed her. They'd left the car unlocked in the small lot beside the old firehouse building, so Josie got in the passenger side and stared straight ahead as he took his time getting behind the wheel.
"This is a nice car," he said when he started the engine.
"What?"
she turned to him and said defensively, because he said it the way people remarked on tacky furniture. When you drove a car that would make Liberace proud, it usually helped to have a sense of humor. But tonight she couldn't take it, not from him.
It's a Cadillac, he said as he pulled out of the lot.
So?
Did your mother pick it out?
My mother doesn't drive. This is my car. I bought it.
You didn't answer my question.
Yes, she picked it out. She had it specially ordered.
She could have sworn she saw him smile.
Stop looking so smug.
Smug?
Yes, like everything you thought of me has fallen back into that nice, safe place you had it before.
He seemed to ponder that for the rest of the drive. Soon he pulled to the curb and stopped behind another parked car. She knew this neighborhood, unique because the houses on one side were high above the street, each with steep concrete steps from the sidewalk all the way up to the front of the house. The yards were dizzying slopes of grass that must be hell to mow. Adam's house was a single-story clapboard with a large front window. There wasn't much personality to it, and she was surprised. This was where Adam lived, but this wasn't his home. "So this is your house," she said. Adam cut the engine. "You didn't know?" "Why would I know?" Now that he knew she'd been pining for him, naturally he assumed she must have been stalking him, too. She angrily got out and began to walk around the car to get to the driver's side. But by the time she reached the front of the car, Adam had met her halfway. Because of the car parked in front of them, she couldn't walk around him without touching him, and Lord knows how he'd interpret that. So she had to wait for him to move. Adam stopped in front of her. The glow of the car's headlamps brightened his hair and face as he looked up at his house. He was so beautiful, he made her chest hurt.
"Looks like Jake's home now," he said. "He's been working late and on weekends ever since this thing with Chloe. Luckily, I was the one to get her message first."
"Are you going to tell him?"
"No."
He suddenly looked down at her, and she had to fight the urge to step back. His eyes dropped to her neck.
"That scarf looks familiar."
She shrugged. "I got it from Chloe. She wanted me to wear it."
"Why would she want you to wear it?" he asked, as if that was the most ridiculous thing he had ever heard.
"She said for color." Adam Boswell, fashion critic? Oh, yes, finding out that she had feelings for him, of course, gave him leave to find all the things wrong with her. How could she still love a man who knew she loved him and was completely appalled by the idea? He was...
"This is Jake's scarf," he said, reaching out to touch it.
Her body gave a start, and he hesitated. When he seemed sure she wasn't going to bolt, he wrapped his fingers around the scarf and pulled slowly, causing a warm friction against her skin. As soon as he had it pulled off of her, cold air darted into the collar of her coat, and she shivered. Adam watched her hand go to her neck. He unwrapped his own light blue scarf and looped it around her, their hands touching briefly. She could only stare at him. He stared back at her for several impossibly long seconds, his hands holding the ends of the scarf as if holding her to him. Finally, he dropped his hands and brushed past her. Up the concrete steps he went, then he disappeared inside. When Josie got home, she stood on the porch in the dark, holding Adam's scarf. She reluctantly hung it on the mailbox. It was a pity scarf, she decided, and she wanted nothing to do with it. No, that was a big fat lie. Not the part about it being a pity scarf, of course, but the part about wanting nothing to do with it. She wanted everything to do with it. She wanted to sleep with it, dance with it, snuggle it like a pet. But that's exactly what Adam thought she'd do, and she wasn't going to give him that satisfaction. She'd always known he didn't love her, but it was easier to bear when he didn't know she loved him. That way they were even. Now he knew he had all the power. It wasn't fair. She decided she wasn't going to run to the door every day just to see him anymore. She wasn't going to pine for him like a silly girl with a heart as soft as summer fruit. She silently unlocked the front door, wishing she'd stopped to get that pie after all. She crept into the dark house and clicked the door closed. When she turned, there was Helena, her eyes wide and excited. Josie screamed, which made Helena scream. Josie quickly put one hand over Helena's mouth and the other over her own mouth. Then she stood perfectly still to see if they'd woken up her mother. When no call came from upstairs,
Helena pulled Josie's hand away from her mouth and said,
"Olsi, I wait for you."
"Thank you, Helena. I appreciate that."
"No, I wait to give something. You wait now, okay?"
Helena disappeared into her bedroom, a large room just under the staircase. She rushed back with a small piece of folded cheesecloth.
"Here, sleep this."
Josie took it. Inside the cheesecloth was a small bone, no more than 3 inches long. "Helena, I really don't need an animal bone."
"Bad thing's still here," Helena whispered.
"What exactly do you think the bad thing is?"
"I don't know. Bad."
"Have you actually seen this bad thing?"
"No."
That, at least, was a relief. Josie only had to keep Della Lee hidden and Helena from trying to exorcise her for a few more weeks.
"Everything is fine. It's all under control. The bad thing will be gone soon, I promise. I don't need this."
She tried to hand the cloth and bone back to her. Helena got a stubborn look to her.
"Take."
"I don't.
Take, 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 take."
"Okay," Josie said. "Thank you."
"Olsi, a good girl," Helena said, going back to her room satisfied.
For the time being. "The sooner I get you out of here, the better. Helena is having a fit," Josie said to Della Lee when she opened the closet door. She thought about not going to the closet at all, just falling into bed and trying to ignore her. But then there was Chloe and what to do about Julian. Josie actually needed Della Lee. Damn it. Della Lee laughed. She was completely unchanged, like telling Josie she thought Marco Cerini was her father was just another conversation they'd had. No big deal.
"I'm having some fun with her. She chased me around in the dark downstairs last night."
Josie lowered herself to the floor.
"She chased you? Good Lord, she could have called the police. Stop teasing her."
"What do you have in your pocket?" Della Lee suddenly demanded, scooting away from her.
"My pocket?" Josie reached into her dress pocket.
"Oh, Helena gave this to me. How did you know?"
"It was sticking out. What is that, a bone?" Josie shrugged.
"I think so.
Ick, just keep it away from me." She waited for Josie to put it away before she asked,
"So, did you have fun with Chloe?"
"No," Josie said vehemently. She fell back onto the floor, like she'd seen Della Lee do so many times. She stared up at the ceiling.
"What happened?"
"Do you know who she's been talking to?" Josie said. "Who she went to the bar to meet?"
"Who?"
She turned her head to look at Della Lee.
"Julian."
Della Lee blinked a few times.
"My Julian?"
"Yes." "Holy crap! I had a feeling the other day, it just hit me, that Julian had already moved on to someone else. But I never dreamed it would be Chloe."
"Keep her away from him, Josie. She's no match for him, especially not in her state. How in the hell did she meet him?"
"I don't know," Josie said, and rubbed her face with her hands.
"You keep an eye on her. You watch her like a hawk."
Josie lifted her hands.
"How am I supposed to do that?"
"I don't know. But that man could ruin her life."
"Like he ruined yours?"
"He was just one more destructive tendency."
Della Lee shook her head, like she couldn't believe it now, like she was looking back on something she'd done a long, long time ago.
"But that's why women are drawn to him, don't you see? He'll ruin her by giving her exactly what she thinks she wants."
Chapter 9 Snow Candy. Josie had to take her mother to the annual Baptist Women's Charity Luncheon the next day, Tuesday. But before they were to leave, Josie decided to call Chloe to see how she was doing. She tried her work number first, but didn't get an answer.
"She's not at work," Josie said as she disconnected.
"I still don't think you know how to work that thing," Della Lee said from the closet.
Today she was wearing Josie's red scarf as a headband, and was trying on all of Josie's shoes.
"I dialed, it rang, no one answered. What exactly do you think I'm doing wrong?"
"It was just an observation. You're so touchy."
I know how to work a phone, Josie grumbled as she dialed Chloe's cell phone number.
Hello?
Chloe finally answered after several rings. She sounded sick. Josie sat on the edge of her bed.
Chloe, it's Josie. How are you feeling?
I'm so sorry about last night, Josie, Chloe said, and her voice started to tremble.
I never thought I would be the kind of woman to act like this, to fall to pieces, but I can't seem to help it. I don't know how to move on from it, and it hurts so much. I missed an appointment to see an apartment this morning. Am I going crazy? I feel like I'm going crazy.
Josie hesitated. Della Lee watched her curiously. I'll be right over, she finally said. As soon as she hung up, Della Lee said, You're going to see her? Josie picked up her gray coat from the chaise.
Yes.
Instead of taking your mother to her luncheon?
Yes.
Oh, my baby is growing up.
You're psychotic, Josie said, leaving the room while dialing another number.
Adam didn't see the scarf draped over the mailbox until he was halfway up the steps. He pulled the buds from his iPod out of his ears. It had been strange seeing Josie and Jake's scarf last night. With the way Chloe was acting, Adam wondered if she was trying to push Jake and Josie together. That didn't sit well with him. Jake and Chloe were, well, Jake and Chloe. But there was Josie wearing Jake's scarf. Chloe should wear Jake's scarf. But when he took it, Josie then didn't have a scarf. So, of course, he gave her his. It was cold. She needed one. All right, so she didn't want to keep it. Her being in love with him and all, he just thought she would. Hell, it wasn't like she'd given back an engagement ring. But did this mean he wasn't going to see her today? Was she mad at him? He'd been harsh with her last night. But just the thought of Chloe and Josie at Nightlight, of all places, and then that bastard called her fat, that still made him angry. He took the scarf off the mailbox and put the Serenis mail in. He hesitated and looked at the door. Josie usually came out before now. He looked over to the driveway. Her car was there. He walked slowly to the steps, pulling the Ferguson's mail out of his bag. He stopped and looked back at the door again. Where was she? Okay, he could just walk away, let her avoid him. It would probably make things a lot easier. But then he shook his head and turned back around. He wasn't going to let her do this. He went to the door and raised his hand to knock, not sure what he was going to say. Maybe he would apologize, tell her that he didn't mean to be so hard on her. Or maybe he would ask her what in the world she thought his secret was. She'd said it like it was obvious, and he'd gone over and over it in his mind last night. He got the feeling there was a lot Josie knew that she wasn't sharing with him. He stopped just short of knocking when he heard voices inside.
"I've taken care of everything. I have to do this, Mother. Someone needs me," Josie said.
"Who? Who needs you more than me?" That sounded like her mother.
"A friend."
All of a sudden the door opened and there was Josie. She looked tired, but her hair was so curly it could never get limp. And the paler her skin, the more striking her dark eyes seemed. She looked... Okay, he could admit it. She looked beautiful. When she saw him, she seemed momentarily nonplussed. She actually took a step back, and he was afraid she was going to close the door on him. But then her mother called, "Josie!" She looked over her shoulder, then reluctantly stepped outside and closed the door behind her. "Hi, Adam," she said, looking down to button her long gray coat. He held out the scarf.
"You could have kept this."
Her eyes darted up briefly, embarrassed.
"I know."
He reached over and took her mail out of the mailbox. He held it out.
"Here's your mail."
But she didn't take that either.
"Just leave it in the box, please. I'll get it when I come back."
He put it back in.
"Have you talked to Chloe today?"
"I'm going to see her now."
She went to the steps and started walking down.
He turned quickly to join her. "Listen, I'm sorry I was so rough on you last night. I was just..."
"Angry," she said.
"No, not angry." He stopped her when she reached the bottom step, putting his hand on her arm. "I could never be angry at you, Josie." She considered him for a moment, as if to gauge his honesty. She stared at him so long he dropped his hand.
"I've been thinking about what you said last night," he said, "that I had a secret."
"I also said it was none of my business. I'm sorry."
She started to turn away.
"Wait.
Why do you think I have a secret?"
"I don't know. Maybe you don't have one. Maybe I was just projecting."
"You have a secret?"
She gave a small laugh and shook her head. "Well, not anymore," she said, and walked to the driveway and the enormous gold Cadillac parked there.
Why hadn't he seen it before? 3 years. Why hadn't he known she was in love with him?
"Are you sure you don't want to keep this scarf?" he called after her.
"No."
"No, you don't want to keep it, or no, you're not sure?"
She looked over her shoulder at him and smiled slightly. His breath caught. He felt a strange stirring, something he hadn't felt in a very long time. It felt a little like when a limb falls asleep, but then slowly, surely, there's a tingling, an almost uncomfortable sensation of waking up. After stopping by the store for noodle soup and 7-Up and Milky Way ice cream, Josie knocked on Chloe's door. When Chloe opened it, she looked miserable. She was wearing a thick terry cloth robe, and her hair was all over the place, each tangled curl looking like it should have a wisp of smoke curling off of it. Mascara was smudged under her eyes. Josie held up the bags and said, "In all my life, I've only ever been sure of one thing. Food makes everything better, at least until it's gone." Chloe smiled, and then she cried. Josie walked in and closed the door behind her. She made a nice pot of stinging nettle tea, which made the decision to eat the ice cream first much easier for them. Margaret stood in the sitting room, confused. Here she was, all ready to go, and Josie just came down the stairs and said she had something else to do. It was so unexpected that she couldn't yet build up an acceptable level of anger because of her shock. "A friend," Josie said. She had to help out a friend. That was clearly a lie. Josie didn't have friends. What was she doing, then? Not 10 minutes after Josie left, there was a knock at the door. "Helena," Margaret said, stopping her as she passed the sitting room. "Tell whoever it is that I'm indisposed. Don't say a word about Josie not being here." Josie was supposed to take care of her. Margaret expected it. Everyone expected it. Shortly, Helena reappeared in the sitting room doorway. "A man at the door for you."
"I said to tell..."
Helena probably didn't know what indisposed meant. Margaret took a deep breath.
"Tell him I'm not feeling well."
"He say he drive you."
"Drive me?"
"Yes, Oldgrit."
Margaret